All right, everybody, this is episode 13, lucky number 13 of The Nerd Party, and this week we are going to be talking about Christmas movies. That's right, Christmas movies. This is the week of Christmas. You are listening right before the holiday, the holiday that Matt and I celebrate with fervor. There's no better way to get into the holiday spirit than to watch some Christmas movies.
Which I have been doing, I'll have you know, since Thanksgiving ended back last month.
I think I've been doing it ever since the day after Halloween. I couldn't help myself. It's like I'll start watching Halloween films at the beginning of October, and as soon as October is done, boom, that's when Christmas movies start making it pass.
See, I don't know. I have like a real OCD mind that I've never been able to explain to anybody. But Christmas films only get brought out the day after Thanksgiving, and they must be put away after Christmas Day for me.
Well, I think the reason why it's easy for me is because I don't like your stereotypical Christmas films. I mean, like when we go through our list, you'll see a lot of movies where you're like, really? That's a Christmas movie? Well, it's a Christmas movie to me.
Okay, well, I can't wait to hear your hipster list.
Well, it's a... I don't know if I'd call it a hipster list. Actually, no, it's very much not a hipster list, but I don't blame you for thinking that that's what I was going to give you. Now, the thing with mine is that I have a handful of movies and a few other things on the side that I'll explain once I get to them, but I don't have that many, so I'm just going to give you three right now. And those three are Nightmare Before Christmas, no big shocker there, Die Hard 2, and Serendipity.
Now, my first question, just listening to those three, is why Die Hard 2 and not Die Hard 1?
I'm glad you asked that, Matthew, because with Die Hard 2, and I love Die Hard 2. I even liked the fourth one. I thought it was nice and action-y. And with this one, Die Hard 1 and Die Hard 2 are both set during Christmas. But the thing that captures it for me is that Die Hard 2 has snow. And I know that may seem superficial, but with Die Hard just being set in Los Angeles, you don't really get that Christmas feel. I mean, like, yeah, they're having a Christmas party, but it really feels like any other kind of company party. But I do like those moments in Die Hard 1 where it's like, now I have a machine gun. Ho, ho, ho.
Now, what is this? I don't understand. What is this snow you speak of?
Oh, that's right. This is a foreign concept to you living in Arizona. Okay, so when it gets bitter cold below 32 degrees Fahrenheit for us Americans, the rain falls from the clouds and then freezes on its way down, and we get this illustrious Edward Scissorhands Winona Ryder spinning around in a circle while he's ice sculpturing effect. That's what happens in the Midwest. And the East Coast.
Wow, that sounds like a pain in the ass to drive in.
It is, and also it's an even bigger pain in the ass to shovel out of your driveway so that you can drive in it.
See, even though I'm one of those people that does not classify Die Hard as a Christmas movie, at least I feel like I'm at home when I watch the first Die Hard, because Los Angeles at Christmas pretty much looks like southern Arizona at Christmas. Actually, northern Arizona does get snow.
Oh, okay. Well, see, so you're not entirely foreign to the concept. Now, a lot of people say, like, who live in the Midwest and the East Coast and everything like that, when they talk to somebody who is from the West Coast or from the South or anything like that, they'd say, like, oh, I would miss the seasons too much. I'd miss the changing of the leaves. I'd miss the snow. No, I lived in Los Angeles for a little bit, just a little bit, and it is amazing how quick you adjust to not having any seasons. It's amazing, and it's a beautiful thing.
To the point where when I went to college, I met people who came from, you know, the New England and New York and that sort of thing, where, you know, colder temperatures for them were like in the 30s, and when they got here, they could handle their first winter, but after a few years of living here, they acclimated to where 50 degrees was really cold for them.
Yeah, and that's the thing for me, is that when I moved back from Los Angeles to Chicago... I think I'm saying that right. I moved back to Chicago right at Christmas time. I think like I moved back on December 20th. That's when I came back, and it was the dead of winter. We were in the middle of a snowstorm, and I was just flabbergasted because I lived in Illinois for 20 years, and I lived in Los Angeles for less than a year, and all of my resistance to the cold was completely zapped. But that's neither here nor there. Die Hard 2, that's my main reason. I was like, growing up, it was my favorite of the series, of the trilogy. I know that some people are probably thinking I was crazy, but I don't know. There's just something about it. I like that it was set at an airport. I like that it involved William Sadler. I think that's his name. Mm-hmm. And I thought there was just so many great actors in it, and it was just a great kind of cheesy. But with Nightmare Before Christmas, I mean, I talked about that extensively during our Halloween show, and there's not too terribly much to talk about that film. It's just I dual purpose that as my Halloween movie and my Christmas movie for obvious reasons. And then finally with Serendipity. Now, it's a romantic comedy. I like romantic comedies, and I'm unashamed of it. I think that can be a lot of fun. I am a big fan of John Cusack's work. Being from Illinois and living in the Chicago area, you kind of have to be a John Cusack fan. It's kind of mm-hmm. expected of you living there. And I just thought it was cute. It was fun. And I remember I was in it takes place during Christmas time, and also like advances years in the future back to another Christmas time, and ends on a another Christmas time. And I remember my uncle was complaining about this movie, and he said he's like, you know what? The movie was just so predictable. And I was like, well, yeah, it's called Serendipity. I mean, it's a romantic comedy. Of course it's going to be predictable. What do you think you're watching?
Yeah, I've yet to see the avant-garde romantic comedy.
Right? And I mean, like, my uncle is by no means a film snob whatsoever, but it was just kind of funny to hear that. And it's pretty much the only thing that I've really enjoyed Kate Beckinsale in. I guess I liked her in Underworld, but that's about it. Serendipity and Underworld.
She's a B action movie star. That's usually how I think of her.
Well, okay, so I gave my first three, and you have a whole bigger list than me, so how about you lay on some of yours?
Well, I'm going to lay out the first one. You mentioned Chicago and Loving John's. That connects very nicely into the first holiday movie that I watched day after Thanksgiving, and that's Home Alone, which was written by noted Chicagoan John Hughes. And it's a movie that I've grown up with. I can't remember a time in my life where I didn't know this movie. I watched it all the time as a kid, even when it wasn't Christmas, and it's just one of my favorite movies, my favorite holiday movies of all time. So that was the first one I watched. I also like the second one. It's not as good as the first one, but the first two with Macaulay Culkin, Joe Pesci, and Daniel Stern are classics, and I always watch them each year.
I was never allowed to watch that as a kid. And my wife wasn't either. It was really funny.
Why? Because it would give you ideas?
Oh, no. Like, they said that they didn't like how disrespectful he was to his parents.
Oh, please. That's how kids are.
Not in my house. And that's the same reason why they didn't want me watching The Simpsons either, is because Bart was too disrespectful to his parents.
Wow, you were sheltered.
I really wasn't. I watched them anyway, but... I know those two examples made it sound like I had a sheltered and strict upbringing, but I really didn't. But yeah, I mean, I watched them, and I watched the second one, and I think I watched them at my aunt's house because she didn't care.
Right. Well, the next one that I'll mention is a threefer, because I watched three different versions of it, and that is, of course, A Christmas Carol. And the three versions that I watch year round are Patrick Stewart's version, which is my favorite. I don't know if you've ever seen it before, but considering that you're a Star Trek fan, you should seek it out.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, TNT.
So I watched that one. The gay side of me likes A Diva's Christmas Carol with Vanessa Williams as Ebony Scrooge, the diva at Christmas, who's way too bratty.
Got about that.
Oh, you've actually heard of this one? I thought I was going to have to explain
it
to you.
I've seen it. Yeah, no, I've seen it. Yeah, I've not just heard of it. I've seen it.
Well, I've got the DVD.
Of course
it's fantastic. And, of course, the kid in me just can't let this one go, The Muppet Christmas Carol. I'm a huge fan of The Muppets growing up. I always was. It's something that I will treasure till my dying day, and that version is just fantastic. It's on Netflix right now. I watched it, like, several times.
It is on Netflix. I watched it this season. That is on my list. A Muppet Christmas Carol is on my list. And that is just one hell of a movie. I mean, it was fantastic when I was a kid, and it's fantastic when I was as an adult. And it's just you forget how many great little moments are in there. And I love that Gonzo and Rizzo are the narrators, the ones that are following us through the picture.
Yeah, Gonzo is Charles Dickens, quote unquote.
Yeah.
And you know, what's not to like? You have Michael Caine playing Ebenezer Scrooge. And that's, you know, I have to say, of the three versions, and I love all three versions dearly, but for whatever reason, the Muppet Christmas Carol is the one that makes me tear up a little bit.
I, you know, that performance that Michael Caine gives towards the end when he's talking to the Ghost of Christmas Future, and, you know, like, he's crying and he's on his knees and he's like, "Tell me, spirit." You know, it's just, it's, it gets to you.
Well, it's not just that. It's the Muppets make me cry. The performances that I call them performances, but they're really the puppeteers. But, you know, the Kermit and Piggy storyline, where in the future storyline where their son's dead and all that sort of stuff, and they're trying to have a nice Christmas. That always makes me cry.
Yeah, no, it's Tiny Tim and everybody around that. Yeah, it's some heavy hitting stuff, especially for a kids movie, especially for a movie involving Muppets.
Oh, and actually, I left out the fourth version of Christmas Carol that I watched, and that's, of course, Scrooged with Bill Murray.
You know, okay, I'm glad that you brought that up, because everyone talks about it. Everyone says that it's amazing, and it's one of their favorites. And it's on Netflix right now, and I started watching it, and I got to the hour mark, and I was just like, ugh, no thank you.
Well, it's kind of smart-ass comedy and dark. It's dark comedy. I like dark comedies. But it's not, I can see how it's not everyone's cup of tea, but I personally can't get enough of, what's her name? Carol Kane as the Ghost of Christmas Present.
Yeah, Carol Kane is pretty awesome. And I like dark comedy. I love Bill Murray, but for some reason it just did not connect with me. I don't know why.
It's one that I've actually heard people have mixed opinions on. I just saw it for the first time in a long time this year, and I ended up really enjoying it. But I think a lot of that is carried by the casting, because I like Bill Murray. I like Carol Kane. Alfrey Woodard, I did not remember, was in that movie, but she is. So, you know, it has a lot of goodwill from the casting.
Yeah, absolutely. A very well casted film, and Karen Allen. You know, like, just it always amuses me whenever I see her pop up.
Yeah, you forget that she actually worked after Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Yeah, she wasn't just hiding in a basket.
And then we all remember she didn't. She did that fourth one, and yeah, she worked, and we preferred that she didn't.
Oh my gosh, let's not start that. Oh my god, we'll have to do an Indiana Jones retrospective.
I don't know, because like, do you want to end it with that note?
See, that's the thing, man. I don't even want to talk about it. I don't even want to talk about it. All right, well, I'll give you my next three. Actually, my next two movies, because you stole my last one, and that would be The Santa Claus and While You Were Sleeping. And The Santa Claus is a really good movie. I think it's very underrated.
Now, this is, of course, Tim Allen, right?
This is Tim Allen's Santa Claus. And for those of you who haven't seen it, please go out and see it. It's Tim Allen accidentally kills Santa. He startles him, and he's on the roof, and he falls off and dies. And so Tim Allen puts on the Santa costume, and then he becomes Santa. And it's all about him trying to balance being Santa and his being a father and spending time with his son. And everybody thinks he's going crazy, but he's actually just fulfilling the role of Santa. And it sounds corny, and it is, but it's actually really funny. I mean, Tim Allen gives a really great performance. And this is during the heyday of Home Improvement. This is while Right. Home Improvement's going on, and this was at the pinnacle of Tim Allen's power and in his career, and he's in full form in it.
I want to say this is the movie that introduced me to Tim Allen, because this is also not only the heyday of Home Improvement, it's also the year before Toy Story, so it would have been the first thing that I, as a 5-year-old, would have seen him in.
Really? I had forgotten that it was a year before Toy Story. Jeez, Toy Story is old.
Yeah, this is actually, we just came upon the 20-year anniversary of this movie. Santa Claus is 1994. So,
good Lord, that's crazy.
Yeah, I had this on VHS. I watched it all the time. It's a great movie. I love it.
And then While You Were Sleeping with Sandra Bullock and Bill Pullman, and this is a great Christmas movie, because it takes place during Christmas. Like, it's Christmas and New Year's, and that's it. And It's a pure Christmas movie, because you actually see, like, it's not just a movie that, like, oh, and they have Christmas dinner, you know, like, and bam, it's a Christmas movie. No, this is set during the time you watch people decorate the tree, open presents, have dinner, and celebrate New Year's, go to parties. It's a really great time, and this is really up there on my favorite not just favorite Christmas movies, but favorite romantic comedies of all time. Sandra Bullock, this is my favorite Sandra Bullock role of all time. Bill Pullman is a great comedic actor in this. It's just the chemistry between the two of them is very real. And also the family, the casting is the best thing about this movie, because the family in this movie is everybody's family. I mean, like, you may not have every single family member represented, but you at least have three of them represented in this. And so you can, it's the most relatable movie, I think, around Christmas time.
So really, you would hold up this movie as Sandra Bullock's best performance for you?
Yeah, I really would, yeah.
I haven't seen it in a long time. I'll have to go back. Sandra Bullock is an actress that I can't narrow down my favorite performance from her. I can say which one is my favorite, but I can't narrow down what's the best.
Well, okay, well, I mean, we have an important distinction there, don't we? I mean, right. When I say my favorite, like, this is absolutely my favorite performance of Sandra Bullock, but, you know, can I say it's her best? Because, you know, she got an Oscar in Blindside, and, you know, Gravity was heralded as, you know, like, her comeback movie, and I don't know, like, what can you say is best with Sandra Bullock? Because she's been in thriller films, she's been in science fiction films, she's been in romantic comedy, she's been in drama, you know, like, she's been in everything. And so it's hard to say what is her best performance, because, you know, not to sound like a fanboy, but almost everything that she's in, she gives a stellar performance. And so it's hard to say which is which.
Right. I don't know. I'd have to think about it. The gay side of me wants to go with Miss Congeniality. But I've seen that movie way too many times than should be allowed for human consumption.
Your gay side is flaring this season during the holiday season.
And it hasn't stopped, because one of my favorite romantic comedies, or I don't know, it's called a romantic comedy. It kind of is Love Actually, and it's set at Christmas time. Great, phenomenal British cast. This is also on Netflix. I had not seen this for a while. I remember the last time I saw it, I was over at a friend's house with a bunch of other people, and it was on in the background, and we weren't really paying attention. But this time I actually got to sit down and watch it. And is it cliche? Yes. Like most romantic comedies, it's very cliche. Again, though, I think just as a fan of film and a fan of certain actors, casting a movie with people that I like goes a long way for me. Like, it's a cheap, easy way to buy my affection, but it does buy it. This is one of the few story movies that where they have sort of an interweaving storyline, in the fact that a lot of the characters end up being more connected than you originally think. But it doesn't play it to the cliche, cheesy way that a lot of those kind of stories do. It's not like, you know, the Valentine's Day or your New Year's Eves or anything like that. It's actually genuine and doesn't feel like it's a gimmick or a distraction. So I was actually really impressed with that film.
Well, those films that you just now mentioned were spawned because of this movie.
Right.
So you have to give it credit there. I did not really like this film. I mean,
I'm shocked.
There were parts of it that I liked, but there was a lot of things that I did not think were there was a lot of things that I thought were completely unnecessary. And I think I read somewhere that they actually, like, there's a 3-hour version somewhere where they actually cut out even more storylines. And it just, I don't know. There was like the Martin Freeman story. I'm like, was that really necessary
to put this in the mill?
I was not.
Oh, please.
That was a big eye roll from me. And I don't know. I just like...
Stop hating good things for the holidays.
you always think I hate good things just because I disagree with you.
Well, by the time we're done with this show, I'm going to come up with a list of all the good things that you hate, and I'll recite it on the final show.
Well, I can come up with a list of all the great movies that you haven't even seen or heard of yet.
Yes, but having not seen and hating are two different things.
Hey, I didn't say I hated Love Actually. I said I didn't like it.
Right. Well, anyway, moving right along.
Anywho.
Making a quick jump to Christmas TV specials, which I do watch, but my favorite, of course, is Charlie Brown Christmas. I just bought the soundtrack to this holiday season. What a heartwarming little tale. I mean, there's a reason that this has been broadcast for the 50 years since it's been made. And it's sitting on my DVR right now. I have not gotten to it yet, but going to when I wrap my gifts later this week.
You know, I don't think I've sat down and watched the entire thing from beginning to end ever.
That is a travesty.
I knew you were going to react that way. Because like all for the past 2 months, that's all you've been talking about is that special. And I didn't have the heart to tell you until just now.
Well, at least you're not hating on it.
Yeah. I never really was a fan of Charlie Brown. I mean, I didn't have any strong feelings towards him or it or whatever, one way or the other. It was just kind of like he just kind of existed. Like I bought the whole set for an ex-girlfriend one time, but we never actually watched them together.
Oh, well, maybe it's a point of contention then.
Maybe.
Now, I have to ask you, before I go on with some of the other things on my list, are there any sort of, like, movie traditions or things that you must see during the holidays? Because there's one film on my list that I always watch at a particular time with my mother. But is there anything like that for you and or your wife, your family, whatever?
Well, I don't have anything specifically that I watch. It's more what I listen to during the holiday season.
Well, we could segue a little bit into movie music and or traditions for you.
Well, let me talk about what my wife watches. Like, there's two things that she watches every single Christmas, and she has to watch it. It's not an option, and that's White Christmas and Holiday Inn.
Oh, she's a Bing Crosby fan then, huh?
She's a Bing Crosby fan, and those movies are essentially the same movie.
Yeah.
And I actually saw White Christmas for the first time 2 nights ago because my wife wanted to see it. She wanted to show it to me, and it's just, I don't know, like growing up, I wasn't raised around a lot of musicals. My mom hated musicals, and so I never really saw them. And it wasn't until I got married that I got exposed to all these great musicals, and I liked it. I liked White Christmas. How about you? Like, what do you have to watch? What do you watch every year with your mom?
Okay, with my mom, it's a tradition. Like 2 or 3 days before Christmas, she and I will gather. We'll get all the presents that we have to wrap, and I'll help her wrap stuff. And the movie we always watch is the original Miracle on 34th Street, because that is that is my favorite of all these Christmas films. That's my favorite. I can't explain to you what it is. I've always been a sucker for the Santa Claus story, and it's so heartwarming and so nice. And I, you know, that era of film, because the original was 1947, and there's just something special about the way that films used to be made in the golden age of Hollywood that just kind of draws me in. I love the old style. I love those kind of performances. You know, you have young Natalie Wood, you have Maureen O'Hara, who I think is gorgeous. And it's such a heartwarming story, and it really, like, you know, I always was a big Santa person when I was a kid. And I don't know, even though, you know, when the Santa mysticism got debunked for me, this is the one movie that always kind of keeps that sort of spirit alive. And so I consider this my favorite Christmas movie of all time.
Yeah, I think you're right. I mean, there's something about those movies that are made in the 30s and the 40s and the 50s that are just very special. I mean, the writing is very unique, and it's such a distinct style, and it's just so great to hear it because nobody talks like that anymore. And, you know, whether you call it cynicism or growth, however you want to look at it on the spectrum, it just doesn't happen anymore. And so these movies are kind of like a window into history, and even the fictional ones. And it's just, I think it's a really great way to gain a different perspective. And I feel like there's a lot of people out there, especially a lot of younger people, who don't like black and white films because they think it's boring. And I'm like, you cannot just turn off, you know, an entire, like, decades and decades of films just because they don't have color in them. And it's just one of the saddest things for me to hear.
Or because they don't have computer-generated effects. Like, these are when stories really had to rely upon their stories and their dialogue in order to create a great film. And, you know, there's just something that's so great about that sort of innocence that I just love that era of filmmaking. I really do.
I completely and utterly agree. Well, before I get into... Actually, the last two things on my list are the things that I have to watch every single year. I just remembered that these last two things are my traditions. But before I get into that, you're gonna totally make fun of me. But there are two albums that I have to listen to every single Christmas, and I was raised on this artist. He holds a very special place in my heart. Like, it was something that we always used to open presents to on Christmas morning, and now I listen to it while I wrap presents, and that is a Neil Diamond Christmas.
So the one person you used to listen to and wrap presents and have all these wonderful memories associated with it just happens to be a Jewish artist, which I find kind of ironic but fun. I like his Christmas music. It's all good, but, you know.
Yeah, I understand the irony, and it's just so funny because my mom couldn't stand, like, she doesn't like Neil Diamond, but my dad and I were like, doesn't matter, don't care. And she's like, yeah, but he's Jewish. I just don't get it. And I was like, I don't care, Mom. It's for his Gentile fans. And it's just, yeah, I think it's absolutely hysterical that my
favorite
Christmas
album is. By the way,
let me
just make very clear, when I was joking about that, that was not meant to be anti-Semitic. It was only to point out a certain irony.
Oh, yeah, I don't think anybody's going to take it as anti-Semitic.
No,
I just want to
make it perfectly clear.
And the other one is an Annie Lennox Christmas.
I love Annie Lennox.
Right? Have you heard her Christmas album?
Yeah, the Christmas Cornucopia album.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's fantastic.
It's phenomenal.
Yeah. Love that album.
It's absolutely amazing. And I mean, like, the first time I heard it, I was just absolutely blown away because it's so epic and almost tribal at times. And it's almost like this blend. It's like Christmas music with this pagan feel, and it's fantastic.
Well, because, you know, she's Scottish, so a lot of it is very Celtic. And it's so, I don't know, the melodies are beautiful, and she's got a hell of a voice. I've always been a fan of hers.
Yeah, I'm a huge fan of hers, and if you haven't heard it, go and listen to it. Matt, do you have any music traditions that you have to listen to while you rap or while you're going through the Christmas spirit before we get into our last bits?
Not personally, no, but you know, my parents have the Christmas albums that they like to hear, and I will say, if Neil Diamond represented what you always heard growing up, then I think for me and my family it was Nat King Cole.
Oh yeah,
breaking out his album, his Christmas album around the holidays, which of course includes, you know, the Christmas song "Chestnuts Roasting on Open Fire." I think he's made the most famous rendition of it. Nothing says Christmas to me that like hearing that guy's voice. So that really brings up a lot of memories for me.
Well, you definitely aren't alone in that. I mean, like when I hear the name Nat King Cole, I mean, even though he's done so much music and so much non-Christmas music, when you hear the name Nat King Cole, you think Christmas.
Right. And speaking of fun traditions, I'll just mention something real quick. There's an independent movie house here in Tucson that shows, you know, what indie movies, cult classics, that sort of thing. Every year, though, around December, they have this event called the Very Merry Holiday Sing-Along. Where you come out, they serve all kinds of eggnog, including alcoholic eggnog. They have candy canes. They pass out glow sticks, and basically, you all gather in the like this huge theater room, and they'll show clips of various performances and songs, and with the words that pop up that you sing along to. And there's an ugly sweater contest, and people just kind of go all out, and that really puts me in the Christmas spirit every year. I've done that for the past 2 or 3 years now. So that's sort of my musical tradition, and it's sort of a hodgepodge of all kinds of artists and songs and that sort of thing.
That's a lot of fun.
So just to finish up my list real quick, because I think we're going to wrap up here. The two that I have not yet seen but are always on my list things to watch are National Lampoon's Christmas Vacation, which I always watch with the folks because they love that movie, and so do I. I actually saw that last year at this indie movie house when they were playing it. Hilarious, insanely quotable film. And then, of course, wrapping it up on Christmas Eve. Yes, I'm one of those people that stays there and watches two or three showings of a row of A Christmas Story on TNT. I love that movie so much. There was literally, I remember, I think it was when I was like in eighth or ninth grade, I was just at my grandmother's house for Christmas Eve, and we were just waiting for dinner to start or something like that. I think I watched the film like two or three times when TBS is doing their 24-hour marathon of just back-to-back showings of it, and I just fell in love with it. An old teacher of mine introduced me to the film by showing it in class. You know how they don't want to do anything those last couple days before the holidays? And they'll just show movies. That's how I got introduced to it, and it's just become a holiday favorite.
See, I thought you were going to say something classy like It's a Wonderful Life.
Well, so, but actually, I'm glad that you reminded me of that because that's my mom's favorite film. So we inevitably end up watching that on, I think, Christmas Eve night is when we usually hit that one up.
Probably the least Christmas movie.
It's not
Christmas
really,
movie
it's,
of all time.
It's not really a Christmas movie until the last act of the film, but. I don't know. There's some. My mom just loves the story. She loves Jimmy Stewart, and it's hard not to. I mean, the man was such a classic film artist, and I like many of his films too. I hope we get to talk about like Rear Window at some point because that's one of my favorites with him in it. I don't know. There's something again, like with Miracle on 34th Street. Even though it's not as much of a Christmas film as that film is, it's very genuine. It's very innocent. It represents that classic era of filmmaking, and again, you know. Great performances, and you know, every time I watch it, I just think to myself, wow, even though you know, I'm still a gay person, I think, wow, Donna Reed is absolutely gorgeous. She's gorgeous in that film.
That's three times you've talked about that tonight.
What the, you know what? That's the other thing I like about, you know, very superficial, but actresses, the way they looked back in those old films, they look. It's just like the definition of elegance, and that goes back to like just that style of the era. Because you know, I've seen pictures of my grandmother when she was back from that age, and she looks stunning. I mean, just the way that people carried themselves back then, it just feels so much more classier.
I was watching a movie called The Best Years of Our Lives, which I hope if you haven't seen it, you'll see it. It's a very good film, and it was shot and set right after World War II. And it's about soldiers coming home and trying to adjust into the new world, into this post-World War II world. And one guy's a family man, one doesn't have a big family, one is actually coming home as a double amputee. And there is a shot towards the end of the movie where the guy who has both of his arms missing, he sees his future wife walk down the stairs during their wedding as she's walking down the proverbial aisle. Mm-hmm. And it is exactly she looks exactly the same as my grandmother, and it's the same dress, same hairstyle, and even the same facial features. It's creepy. And so like when you brought that up, it just it made me think of that.
But don't you think that like you look at some of those old movie actresses of Hollywood's golden age, and there's just something about the way that they carry themselves that just makes them look so elegant and so regal that it, you know, not to say that that's lost on today, because there are many actresses today that are also very beautiful, but there's nothing that seems so high class about them the way that it used to.
Well, I think it stems from a very presentational style of filmmaking, because you know, back in the day, you know, it was very much like a play. Like shooting a movie was very much like putting on a play, just with cameras and bigger lights. And so when that camera started rolling, they had that presentational, almost semi-Greek style of knowing exactly where the camera is and being aware of it at all times and making sure that you cheat and just that, you know, like you are, your shoulders are in chest out, you know, chin down, head up, you know, and it's just all those types of things that is kind of lost today because of the much more advanced technology and able to get different angles with different cameras.
Oh, well, that pretty much does it for my list, and I think that's pretty much going to wrap it up unless you have anything else. But like I said, as you could evidence by like the 10 plus movies and specials on my list, I love this time of year. And again, it's something that I mentioned back during the Halloween show, where it's movies like this, it's traditions like this that keeps the young kid in me sort of happy and alive. And I kind of like that those things about myself. I you know, there's something about this time of year that just makes me feel young, and it just reminds me of the good times that I've had with family. So keeping that sentiment alive through the enjoyment of these films, I think, is a wonderful thing and something that I look forward to each and every year.
Well, I couldn't have put it better myself. I completely echo your comments, but I do have two last things that I'll talk about quickly.
Forgive me for being so premature.
It's quite all right. Those two last things are That 70 Show and The Office. What my wife and I love to do is watch the Christmas episodes from That 70 Show and The Office. And with the invention, even though we own every single season on DVD of both of those shows, it's a whole, ever since the invention of Netflix, it's so much easier just to skip around from season to season and just watch the holiday episodes. And so we usually pick a day where we have nothing going on and we binge watch and marathon all of those episodes. And it's just a lot of fun. And I'd say that that's kind of my wife and I's new holiday tradition that we started ever since we got married.
That's really cool. Had I known we were talking about TV episodes of running TV shows, that would have opened up a whole nother realm for me. But suffice it to say, there's a lot. I guess the one that I'll name drop, because there's only two episodes that were ever Christmas-themed in this show, but they're ones that I watch every year. And that's, of course, the two episodes of The Golan Girls that were the Christmas shows.
Oh, you have such a special place in your heart for the Golden Girls. Oh, all right. Well, that is our show. You have a little bit of a shorter one this week because we want you to get to the Christmas festivities, and we need to get to the Christmas festivities. But we want to hear from you. What are some of your favorite Christmas movies? Tell us ones that we missed. Tell us which ones you think we're crazy for liking or crazy for not putting on our list. Like, email us, contact@thenerdparty.com, and you can find everything that you need at thenerdparty.com. And there you can find all of our episodes, as well as where you can listen to us, whether it's iTunes, Sprecher, Burberry, wherever podcasts are popular, you will find us.
Yeah, and don't forget to like us on Facebook. We're starting to interact more and more there. And also, too, I mean, We named our Christmas films because that's the holiday that we celebrate. But what do you guys watch around this time of year? I mean, we're all kind of celebrating something, whether you're Christian, Jewish, or what have you. What brings out the spirit of whatever holiday you celebrate this time of year? It doesn't even need to be that holiday themed. What are your favorite traditions for December? Let us know.
Yes, please let us know. And as I said before, you can email us or you can go onto Facebook, like Matt said, or you can find us on Twitter. I'm at The Insane Robin.
And I'm at mhansen0207.
And thank you so much for listening, and have a Merry Christmas and Happy Holiday.
Coming up next week.
Without a body, without a murder weapon, their only hope is a confession.
Y'all know anything yet?
You need to tell me.
How was your marriage, Nick?
Are you asking me if I killed my wife?
Man of my dreams. This man of mine may kill me.
What about my son,
Nick?
This man may kill me. In her own words,
this man may truly kill me.
You ever hear the expression, the simplest answer is often the correct one?
Actually, I've never found that to be true.
Join the revolution. Join the Nerd Party.
Welcome to Nerd Party.